It's really good to be with you this evening, doing a presentation on my research. And basically the primary aims of my research, on my presentation this evening, is to kind of give you an idea of the context of my research, maybe describe some of the ethical dilemmas faced as part of my research, kind of giving a description of the impact and the purpose of involving young women from the beginning of the research project, really, helping me design all the research tools, and then giving you some flavour of the initial findings to date. I'm currently halfway through my PhD, so I've got quite a long way to go yet as well. So my research questions is focusing on kind of having a view of women's narratives and young women's perspectives. So I'm doing research in North Wales, which is quite confusing for many people because I study and work in Lincoln, but I actually live in North Wales. And when I do presentations, people say, God, are they near? I'm like, no, geographically, no. They're still about four hours apart. So I tend to travel, but my research area is with key kind of agencies and schools, youth clubs, community first areas, and youth justice services in North Wales. And my research question is going to be looking at the women's perspectives of the nature, patterns, and impact of abuse within teenage relationships, primarily to have a look at challenging that kind of everyday notion of abuse. And also, as I previously said, to kind of fully involve young women in the research from the beginning to the end, and also kind of looking at the outcome, the impact and the outputs of the research. So having a look at kind of designing potential prevention and early intervention responses, depending on the analysis of the findings and the data. So I do really want to work with agencies after I finish my research to kind of have a look at bidding for resources to develop further resources to be used in schools with young people. So the research context. My research is going to be the first mixed method research in Wales on this topic, and there hasn't been kind of many UK-based research on intimate partner violence or teenage violence or teenage abuse or dating violence, as it's called within the American literature. So I'm kind of using broad range of literature from research done with children but also adult-based research. And I've kind of, to inform the literature review, I've had a look at kind of starting from the definition of gender norms, and kind of having a look at the overarching perspective of how that's shaping my research question and my research kind of tools. But also I've had a look, obviously, at research focusing on patterns of abuse within teenage relationships and other kind of related child protection issues such as child exploitation, sexting. It's all kind of like a web of issues interweaving together now. So I've kind of had a look at the policy context as well, in particular, obviously, the shifting landscape in light of the revision to the Home Office definition of domestic abuse and violence since March last year, which kind of acknowledged and included for the first time young people in that definition, which basically said young people now over the age of 16 can be victims or survivors of domestic violence and abuse in the UK. So I think the kind of agencies, policies now kind of getting to grips that actually the group most at risk of domestic violence and abuse in the UK are young women aged 16 to 19 years old, with the second group most at risk are young women in their 20s, early 20s. So the patterns of information and data gathered as a result of the British Crime Survey has shifted and informed policy in this area. So I'm kind of looking at what the NSPCC has done, because the only key UK-based research in this area have been two quite in-depth research undertaken in the Bristol area. One, school-based research across 8 schools in the Bristol area, and then a further project done in 2011 by Woods focusing on disadvantaged young people. And those disadvantaged young people were regarded as young people who had been in local authority care, young people who were open to youth defending service, young people not in education. So there have been some interesting kind of messages and patterns established from the NSPCC research, primarily that on the face of it, the patterns of abuse within teenage relationships look to be the same for young females and young males. However, when you start peeling away the layers, it becomes quite clear the severity, the prevalence and the impact of abuse on young women is far greater than that of the impact on young men. So that's the kind of key messages from the NSPCC research, and also, as I've said, the links with child exploitation, sexting, that kind of risk posed by the new media technologies and that impact on the kind of nature of young people's relationships. And kind of, just to kind of finalise my literature review, I also had a review of prevention and intervention programmes available in the UK, and kind of had a look at some of the ideas around the concept of healthy relationship and some of the research around consent and healthiness and what's okay and what's not okay within relationships, again looking at those gendered norms. The philosophical stance for my research is that of a feminist perspective, focusing on a feminist constructivist view, really, primarily that genders are socially constructed, and then the impact that has on the shaping of relationships. But also I'm adopting a sociology of childhood paradigm, focusing on young people as active agents in their own lives, and their voice and again their participation in keeping with Article 12 of the UNCRC. So those are kind of my framework and my lens, and that's how I see, you know, my research basically. So the methods adopted, all my fieldwork has been done in North Wales with a range of gatekeepers and agencies. Presently I'm working with 10 gatekeepers, several school youth club settings, community first areas, and also youth justice service covering two local authority areas. And my main kind of process is split into three key processes, really, starting with the advisory groups and then the quantitative stage, looking at that questionnaire with young women, focusing on gendered norms, attitudes, and then having a look at kind of those spectrum of behaviours that they need to kind of report whether or not it's okay or not okay within intimate relationships. And then the final stage, which I'll be commencing next month, is going to be focusing on semi-structured interviews with a sample of 20 to 25 young women. So the advisory groups, I had two advisory groups with different functions. And between advisory groups, there was about 40 young women involved. The first advisory group, the aim of that group was basically to give me advice on my questionnaire as a whole. So I kind of did about six sessions with them and broke down the questionnaire into specific sections each week and did some different activities with them around gathering their views and their opinions on the questionnaire. The second advisory group, the role of that group was basically to pilot and do all the testing for the questionnaire. So both groups, but two groups, but different functions. And because the area that I'm researching is primarily Welsh and Welsh speaking, everything was done bilingually. Even the sessions, I kind of did all the sessions bilingually, talking both English and Welsh. But that kind of brought a different dimension to the advisory groups, really, of having their view not only on language use, both English and Welsh, because my Welsh tends to be quite formal, so I just wanted to make sure that I was pitching it in a right, but also an age-appropriate manner. But also they kind of checked my translation and told me what was right and what was wrong, which was good, because that was the whole purpose of the groups. there were several ethical issues, as you can imagine. We've got a sensitive topic here. We've got research with young women aged 15 to 17 years old. And I had to negotiate several layers of consent, familial consent and institutional consent with several gatekeepers. So preparing for the ethics review was quite interesting, to say the least. But I think preparing in depth had its kind of merits later on, because actually gaining access then with the gatekeepers has been okay, but it has been time consuming, and it has been a negotiation throughout. And I feel as if the process has been, yes, of course you can have access and can do some work in school, however, can you do X, Y, and Z? So it has been kind of a bit of a two-way process, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think that's the nature of working with busy statutory agencies. I think to kind of establish rapport with the young women, I made it very clear from the outset what the boundaries were. We established the ground rules together, and they were kind of focused on confidentiality, you know, consent, in the sense that if they didn't want to participate later on, they could elect to opt out, safeguarding issues, and the fact that everyone had a voice. So there was no right or wrong answers to what I was asking them about my questionnaire. It was just their view and their constructive criticism. So we established some ground rules together, but then I kind of shifted the landscape a bit and made it very clear to them that I wasn't a teacher, I was a researcher, and that actually they could just call me Carol. There wasn't any need to go miss and put their hand up or what have you. And that kind of change in the nature of the session really engaged the young people in a proactive manner, where as the sessions went on, they kind of really engaged and were able to open up, which was positive. And actually, I think they just kind of loved marking my stuff and being constructive and being critiques and actually saying, what do you think? You know, so it was good, because that's what I wanted as part of the process. So we started off by doing some icebreakers to build some good rapport. And I won't go through all the icebreakers I did, but one of the key icebreakers started off with was, if you're marooned on a desert island, what three things would you take with you? And you know, I was expecting quite a range of answers. However, I have to say, across all the 40 young women, there was an unanimous view that they would all take. The first group said iPads, and the second group said phones. So, you know, they cannot live without their social media tools, which was kind of, in one way, I was quite amused that it was an unanimous issue, an unanimous answer. But then I thought, oh God, because some of my sub-questions are really getting into the nature and the impact of new media technologies. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm on the right track here. You know, because one thing I told them was, listen, you know, I'm certainly not 16 anymore. You know, the oil of Eula is not having that much of an impact. And my daughter's just told me yesterday she does all my white hair coming here. So I really need your views, I told them. I really need you to help me. And they kind of liked that. But with the desert island, not only did they kind of elect to make sure they had a communication method, but most of them actually went so problem-solving to the extent that now I would take Wi-Fi with me as well. So there were kind of some issues like that, which will be quite useful as well in later on when I'm kind of evaluating the data as a whole. And their role as part of the advisory group was consultative. And the benefits, basically, as I've said, were overwhelming for me, because I just got some things horribly wrong. And actually, on reflection, and I did reflect quite a bit, I thought to myself, yeah, of course. You know, I put certain things and I'd use certain words, and they said, no, just that's not right. So the benefits, I think, was not only getting the research tools in the context of the young person's voice, but was also making sure that it was right to ask the questions on a sensitive topic that would suit their needs. I did do some evaluation at the end, and it was a head, heart, carrier bag and dustbin process. And I told them, you know, what do you think? What will you take away? How will this shape your thinking? So they kind of evaluated that. How will this affect the way you're feeling about certain things? What will you take away in your carrier bag? And what will you bin? And what was quite nice about the evaluation, what they would bin were the private discussions of some of their students. So they'd really grasp the idea of confidentiality and respecting the views of others. So I started off the process really of asking them what was important for them in relationships, because what I didn't want to be doing was designing a questionnaire that completely missed the point of what was key. Okay, I'm talking for Wales, don't I? Sorry. Right. I'm going to have to do speeding on now, sorry. It was basically to kind of have a think about what were the key issues for them, so that I wasn't busying in my office writing a questionnaire that wasn't relevant at all. You know, I wanted to get a balance where it was research informed but also their views. So we kind of went through the process of doing some word clouds to have a look at kind of some of their ideas and keywords. And I used different tools with them. Diamond ranking was to have a look at ranking their views with the most important at the top of the pyramid. You know, some participatory tools, basically. And as I've said, the use of words, they really got into grips with critiquing my use of words. And as part of the process, I developed some stories, some vignettes, and I had a range of vignettes designed. And what I wanted was for them to go through in their groups, so there were separate groups evaluating different vignettes, just to get their views on whether or not the characters were realistic, whether or not the scenario were realistic, or whether or not I really needed to change something. And basically in one of the vignettes, I put a scenario where they were drinking vodka, and they kind of said, no, we don't drink vodka. You know, why have you kind of chose that? And I thought, I don't know. They said, no, we drink WKD or cheap beer. So I think for them, it was kind of trying to bring it into youth subcultures and different kind of, you know, norms of what they did locally as well, to make sure that my stories were realistic. But actually, I've kind of drafted the vignettes, some of them quite short, and they said, no, we need longer vignettes. We really need to engage with it. And I have to say, from doing the advisory groups and the questionnaires, the vignettes have certainly been an effective tool of doing research on sensitive topics. They immerse themselves in it, and they find it easier to respond to other people's experiences or other people's scenarios. And what I did then was have a Likert scale at the end of each vignette with, asking really their agreement on different statements, focusing on some of the key issues in the stories. And, the learning for me really was actually the sociology of childhood and looking at the voices of young women is in keeping with the feminist perspective I've adopted. But also, I think throughout the process, it made me critically reflect on my own position. And even though I kind of looked at working in partnership with young people, that power imbalances of the role of me as a researcher and them as the young people were still there, and it was about how I managed that really. The importance of the young women as experts in their own lives, the issues around working with gatekeepers and ethics and sensitive topics, but I think invaluable. I can't tell you how important it's been to be able to tap into their attitudes and beliefs. And quickly, I'll just kind of give you a flavour of some of the initial findings from my analysis of the questionnaires. So basically, the questionnaire starts off with some really statements and scenarios around gender norms. And 86% of the young women are really challenging some of these gender norms around boys and men as better leaders than women. One thing that the advisory group said, no, you really need to include a statement around appearance and whether or not how your appearance is more important to boys than girls. And when I've surveyed on this question, 66% have strongly disagreed or disagreed with this statement. And as I've already told you, the dominance of social media has been throughout not only the advisory groups but also the questionnaire stage. 90% of the young women I've surveyed had a mobile with internet access. 85% use Facebook, 83% use Snapchat. I've had to learn about a lot of these things and a horrendous programme called Catfish, which is on MTV and surprisingly is on something like it's 10 series and it's horrendous. Sexting without permission, they say it happens, however 88% think it's wrong. And rating appearance, 64% said that rating a young woman's appearance on Facebook, any other media, social media sites is inappropriate. And when I had a look with them around, well, why do you think boys and men are abusive? In particular, to have a look at kind of some of the myths or the explanatory frameworks offered. 45% said that it was because boys and men want to control women, and the second most popular was that they want to be more powerful. And just to finish, I also wanted to have a look for them. Who is the sympathetic adult? What the research from the NSPCC says basically is that the sympathetic adult for young women are their peer group. And I wanted to kind of challenge this. Well, are there any key professionals that they would access? And these were all yes or no questions. Their top supports were their peer groups. So thank you very much.